On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With me today, the editors of the well-read, well-loved, and well-known title, The Big Book of Jewish Humor, never out of print in a quarter century, out this year in its 25th anniversary edition. William Novak is America's super ghostwriter who, as he says, helps famous people write their stories. And the list he's helped is amazing. Lee Iacocca, Tip O'Neill, Nancy Reagan, Oliver North, Magic Johnson, George Stephanopoulos, Tim Russert, and many more. William Novak, thanks for being here today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And Moshe Waldox is here. 25 years ago, a bearded funny guy, now rabbi at Temple Beth Zion, TBZ, in Brookline, Massachusetts. He was officially ordained at the age of 47 and now officially straddles the sacred and the funny, or maybe pulls them together. Moshe Waldox, thank you very much for joining us.
We're not waiting for Bill to write the book about me.
Right. That'll be a great day.
Still working on it.
It'll be a great day. 25 years. Did you think it would keep selling all that time?
Well, we hoped, you know. When we started, Moshe encouraged me to think very big, because he thinks very big.
Yeah.
And he wanted a book that would really last and would do something no book had ever done before, that it would contain more than jokes and short stories, film scripts, comic routines, cartoons, satires, parodies, and 100 other things.
And it's all there.
And it seems to have lasted. It's never been out of print, as you mentioned.
I think the hard part of doing any kind of collection is how do you create material that's going to be evergreen, that will have that freshness. And I think aside from maybe one or two sections, like for instance, we have a section on jokes from the former Soviet Union.
Yeah,
The Soviet Jewry movement succeeded. But from a historical point of view, those jokes are still funny. But I think aside from that, most jokes have and the stories last. And they really, you know, the thing about Jewish humor is that the punchline can become an axiom. So you can sort of use that punchline again and again and again.
Right.
And create a new joke around
it. So turn the diamond, turn the gem this way or that.
That's right. And I think great punchlines become what are called Sprichwerte. They become axioms that I'll give you an example.
Yes, please.
You think he thinks we're teaching him English. Now, that can be used for all kinds of situations. The joke is, of course, that a guy goes into a Chinese, into a Jewish restaurant on the Lower East Side, and there's a Chinese waiter, and the Chinese waiter is taking orders in Yiddish.
Mm.
And he's like, phenomenally Yiddish. And the guy says to the owner after the dinner, he says, that's amazing. That Chinese waiter is speaking Yiddish. And he goes, shh, he thinks we're teaching him English.
and off we go. Moshe, give us more. I was tempted to rob everything in the introduction here and use it all. But take us into a couple of the, short and sweet, so it'll get us in the groove that you guys are cultivating in the Big Book of Jewish Humor.
Well, you know, Jewish humor deals with a lot of short jokes, but also a lot of big stories. One of my favorite stories, of course, has to do with a guy who, a rabbi. I love rabbi and minister jokes, as
of
you
course,
can imagine.
Everybody does, and you would in particular, right, Rabbi.
Recently, I was at a clergy meeting over in Brookline, and
I'm already laughing.
talking about how many funerals we do, and after a while, I turned to Father Murphy. I say, Father, tell me, after you go, what do you want said at your funeral? And he says, well, I'd like you to say that I was a good son of the church, and I was a great pastor for my flock.
Mm.
And we turned to Minister Williams. Minister Williams says, well, I'll have to say that I was a good father and a good family man and a great leader of the church. And they asked me, Rabbi Waldox, what do you want to say? Well, when they're up there and they're looking down at me, I'd like him to say, look, he's moving.
he's alive. He's alive.
He's moving.
William Novak, give
you
us more
one
here.
Of my favorites?
Yes, please.
A joke that Moshe once told me manages to offend six different groups in about seven lines.
Okay.
Four men are walking in the desert.
Yep.
The German says, I'm tired and thirsty. I must have a beer. The Italian says, I'm tired and thirsty. I must have wine. The Mexican says, I'm tired and thirsty, I must have tequila. And the Jew says, I'm tired and thirsty, I must have diabetes.
We love it, and we hear it. And Moshe, there's one also from Jonathan Katz, of course, the great comic here to Boston.
It's a favorite of mine.
Oh, so please, tell
it. Jonathan Katz is lives in Newton, Massachusetts, a wonderful comedian, a comics comic, and the creator of the wonderful Comedy Central TV show, Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist.
Indeed.
And in a line that is often quoted and sometimes stolen, He said, I was having dinner with my father the other night, and I made a classic Freudian slip. I meant to say, please pass the salt, but it came out, you putz, you ruined my childhood.
And we can't stop. Moshe, keep us going.
Well, there's a great story. You know, I'm involved in a lot of interreligious work, and in 1999, I traveled with Cardinal Law and a number of Catholics and Jews to Israel and Rome. Mm. And it reminded me of a joke about a guy who came back from a trip to Rome, and they said, well, you have a good time? He says, yeah, did you see the Pope? Yeah, I saw the Pope. Knew, what do you think? He says, well, liked him, didn't like her.
Oh, and we're getting in deep. What, you know, 25 years in a way is a long time, but it's a drop of time in this sort of expanse of time that this strain of humor was brewed in. I mean, we're talking centuries and centuries in the making here. What's changed since it came out, Bill?
I think one thing that's changed is that Moshe and I seem to find it in more unexpected places. You mentioned before The Simpsons. Now, I'm not going to tell you The Simpsons is a product of Jewish humor, but you'll find Jewish humor on The Simpsons, and we produce one of those in the book, and maybe even you have such a clip. We find it on Jon Stewart. We find it on
The Daily
of course,
Show,
on
Comedy
Daily
Central.
That's right. We find it on, of course, Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm. We find it in mainstream places. And whereas when we first researched the book, we spent a lot of time in libraries. When we produced the updated 25th anniversary edition, we spent a lot of time with the remote control.
Watching
TV.
Go straight to television, yeah. And there it is. Let's listen to just a minute from The Simpsons here. As you say, it's not every corner, it's not all the time, but there it is, right in the middle of completely mainstream humor. Here from a 2003 episode, Like Father, Like Clown, Krusty the Clown joins The Simpsons for dinner. Bart asks him to say grace, which in turn reveals Krusty's Jewish heritage.
Krusty, would you do the honors?
Well, all right. I'm a little rusty, but I'll try. Baruch ata Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem, min haaretz.
Oh, he's talking funny talk.
No, Dad, that's Hebrew. Krusty must be Jewish.
A Jewish entertainer? Get out of here.
Dad, there are many prominent Jewish entertainers, including Lauren Bacall, Don Shore, William Shatner, and Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks is Jewish?
Krusty, are you all right?
Yes, it's just that saying the bracha brings back a lot of painful memories. The old days. My father.
And off we go right there on the TV set every night in America, the bracha and the motzi and Krusty.
And you wonder if someone in Iowa was waiting for the subtitles. But, you know, what is interesting about that show, that's a parody. And one of the things that I mentioned to our readers in the first introduction was that an essential form of Jewish humor is parody, and probably that begins with the Scroll of Esther, which is in the Hebrew Bible, which is a parody of the Persian court. And The Simpsons love to do parodies, and this was a parody of The Jazz Singer, obviously, that great film. And, of course, they were very clever by having the father, who was the father and Krusty being estranged, the father's played by Jackie Mason. Mm-hmm. And Jackie Mason, in turn, in his own life, had a father who was estranged from him for becoming a comedian. So they really played on many different levels of cognizance.
But and that wonderful line after he mentions these people, was it William Shatner and
Lauren Bacall,
Shore, who people are not clear about, then he says Mel Brooks is Jewish. What a great line!
Right. As we don't know anything here, but we know that. In 1981, your impression, you wouldn't have found this on TV? Was it all Andy of Mayberry, really, in 81, just 25 years
ago? It would have been much harder to find. You know, people wonder, why isn't Seinfeld in the original book? Because Seinfeld didn't start until 1990, I think, or 91. And we tried to reflect some of the newer stuff in the introduction. Jewish humor was more ghettoized 25 years ago, you know, and now it's more mainstream. Moshe, you have
but
a way of putting
it. Even though there was a hegemony, if you will, of Jewish men of Eastern European descent in American comedy, all the comedians you saw on the Ed Sullivan Show, the show of shows, Sid Caesar, Carl Reiner, even so, they never really did material with Jewish subjects. It was Jewish style humor.
Style, but not the substance of it, the
words. And
what's
happening now is that you're finding a lot more content. You watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. He had an entire season devoted to issues of Jewish identity, to issues of Jewish-Christian relations.
With Larry David on HBO, yeah.
Jewish character. At one point, he converts and becomes a different person.
Right. When he becomes a Gentile, you know, he finds that he's adopted by Gentiles. All of a sudden, he becomes mechanically adept, you know, that kind of stuff.
or the moment
where he takes a nail that somehow comes from a promotion.
This is an interesting thing. He wants to put up a mezuzah on his door. Mezuzah is a little amulet you put on your door.
It has the famous paragraph,
Hero Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love your Lord your God. Jesus' favorite prayer, right? It's in there. And every Jew puts Jesus' favorite prayer on his door.
That's one way to look at it.
So Shelley Berman, one of the old-time Jewish comedians, plays his father. He wants to put up a mezuzah. The father's coming. He looks around. He can't find the nail. Now, this was a response to, of course, the Mel Gibson phenomena, which nobody really responded to.
This is a nail that came in a promotional thing.
So his father-in-law is sleeping in the living room, his Gentile father-in-law. Yeah. He has bought a souvenir nail to put around his neck.
From the movie.
Right. Let's listen.
What's going on there?
I'm putting up a mezuzah.
Wait a minute. Is that my nail?
I'll get you another one.
You took my nail?
Larry!
That's blasphemy!
What? What is going on?
Took my nail! He took my nail! He took the nail right off my neck!
Why'd you have a nail around your neck?
Jesus' nail!
Oh, no!
That's Jesus' nail!
My father's coming right now!
Oh, and it's happy chaos as Mel Gibson meets the mezuzah. Let's take a call. Adam, no less, is on the line from Medford, Massachusetts. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question for you, I guess, is you've started to address it, but I would appreciate it if you could do it more explicitly.
Yes, please.
What counts as Jewish humor? Is it humor by Jewish comedians? Is it humor with a Jewish subject? Is it a little bit of both? I mean, I'm getting a gloss from the examples you've given, which have all been great, but I think I can understand where y'all are coming from better if you were to say, you know, for purposes of the anthology, we restricted it to this or that.
Absolutely. Adam, that's exactly where we want to go. William Novak, begin to take some. What makes humor Jewish?
It's sometimes hard to say. Yes, if it has recognizably Jewish characters or Jewish themes. But we also tried to figure out what are the components of Jewish humor in terms of its content. I'll mention a couple. I know Moshe has many to review. Some of the things are, it's that it's usually about something. That is, it has some agenda or some topic. It's not slapstick. It tends not to be silly. Mm. It's often political, and you almost never makes fun of people without power or status. So it is political in that way.
Mm-hmm.
The technical term is that a lot of Jewish humor, not all of it, but a lot of it is what is called shtuch humor. Stoch, S-T-O-C-H.
For those
who are taking notes out there. And the shtoch is basically the idea of a jab. The jab is that, and again, I'm doing this very humbly, but akin to the prophetic role in the Hebrew Bible, a true comic in the Jewish tradition is there to expose some truth behind what we see, and also to deflate pomposity, deflate hypocrisy, and the shtoch is a jab which allows you to sort of pierce that pomposity and see it deflate.
You've got a reference to this in a couple of pages of Jewish curses, which are both cutting but always have that humor. May all your teeth fall out except one so you can have a toothache. May onions grow in your navel. May the heart burn after one of your meals be strong enough to heat the Tsar's palace. I mean, the jab and a curse, of course, comes right through, but with that humor.
Well, I think that, you know, we could be, I for many years was a strict constructionist about Jewish humor. It wasn't enough that a person was circumcised at the age of 8 days of male to make a Jewish humor. It wasn't enough. Mm. So I remember George Burns passed away. I get a call from one of the news outlets. Could you talk about George Burns and Jewish humor? I said, you know, George Burns happened to be a Jew, but he never did Jewish humor. Mm. So that was when I was a strict constructionist. However, Seinfeld began to alter my opinion.
And to blur those boundaries.
And
it?
Blur the boundaries.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Style,
what
that
way?
There was a style. You didn't have to be explicitly using the word Jew or have a specific Jewish context in order to really still have a Jewish feel. For instance, a show that we talk about is The Condo, which was a show about Seinfeld's father and the Condo Association in Florida.
Yes.
Now, anybody in American Jewish life knows about Jews in Florida and condos. You don't have to use the word Jew, but the small-mindedness and the term that Shalom Aleichem used, the great Jewish humorist, was the Kleinmenschlichkeit, the little peoplehood.
The little stuff
is really interesting to see that this could have been a shtetl story written 100 years ago about the local city council, and it turned out to be in Florida. And I said, you know, maybe Seinfeld is really projecting a new sense of Jewish humor in a very broad way. Now, one thing we have to also bear in mind is that Americans may have gotten to be less Jewish, but America's gotten to be more Jewish.
What do you mean exactly?
You can get bagels everywhere now.
Of course, yeah, it's all over.
It's a little bit diluted. It's diluted, but it's more accessible.
Much more accessible and acceptable. I mean, people today no longer look upon the Jew as a total other, as perhaps he did 100 years ago.
It's sewn right in now.
For good and for bad. And in a sense, you know, I've often lamented the Jews becoming white, to be honest.
The dilution, the word.
Right.
On the other hand, it opens the party
opens
up to a whole lot of people.
Exactly.
William Novak, in the original introduction, you wrote, like the Jewish people, Jewish humor is optimistic in the long run, but pessimistic about the present and the immediate future. Running through many of these jokes, twin currents, anxiety and skepticism that can become so strong that even the ancient sources of Jewish optimism are swept up in them. Don't worry, goes one punchline. God has protected us from the Pharaoh and Haman. He will protect us from the Messiah, too.
Right.
You got it right there.
Right.
Or the classic Jewish telegram, right? Start worrying, letter follows.
Right. Seinfeld, of course, may have the structure, may just have the condo down and that sort of endless worrying over this, but also very straightforward sometimes. So here's an episode from Seinfeld called The Bris, name for the male newborn circumcision ceremony. Here, Elaine and Jerry play the role of godparents. Jerry holds the baby, but the Moyle, the guy who's going to do the cutting, misses and accidentally cuts Jerry's fingers. Here in this scene, Jerry and the Moyle meet in the hallway of the hospital.
Oh, well, if it isn't Shaky the Moyle. Nice job on the circumcision, but it's not supposed to be a finger.
The circumcision was perfect. The finger was your fault. You flinched.
Oh, who made you a Moyle? Where'd you get your degree from, a matchbook?
You see, he flinched again.
Nice Moyle picking, Elaine. You picked a hell of a Moyle.
One more peep out of you and I'm going to slice you up like a smoked sturgeon.
Oh, don't threaten me, butcher boy.
Butcher boy?
Yeah, what was this?
Okay, it's Bris and Moyle and Butcher Boy, but we're way out of the shtetl here. This is Seinfeld. This was the most popular.
That's why Moshe said he expanded his definition, because suddenly the categories were broken. You had, in a way that restaurants went in some communities from kosher to kosher style, we had sort of Jewish style humor, and it played all over the country. But it's still funny.
It is indeed all over. Rebecca's calling from Stowe, Massachusetts. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. So often when I watch either Curb Your Enthusiasm or Seinfeld, I'm reminded of the stories called the Schlemiels, which I believe were written by Isaac Beshevis Singer. And I just wondered if the author knows whether or not Larry David was somehow informed or inspired by those old tales, because to me, there's just so many parallels in the characters and the way they develop and all of their foibles.
You know, the Schlemiel is not so much the name of a story. It's a character in Jewish folklore and fiction. Ruth Weiss of Harvard, Professor Ruth Weiss of Harvard, has written a book called The Schlemiel as Modern Hero. And I think, to go back to Seinfeld, wouldn't you agree, Moshe, that the George is the central Schlemiel? And there's a saying about the Schlemiel is the guy...
Who spills the soup.
And the Schlemazel is the guy on whom the soup is spilled.
And you don't have to go to Isaac Beshevis Singer necessarily to get it. Larry David would have it by absorption.
He may not know the word, although he probably does.
Schlemiel would, but not necessarily from
a particular... It's in the blood. The hapless figure.
Right. But it's interesting. The hapless figure goes back in many, many, many ways to even the idea that... I give you an example. Remember, he's not Jewish, even though people have claimed him to be Jewish and want him to be Jewish, Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin's a little tramp. He's the guy who himself, he doesn't have the building fall on him, But you notice when he walks by, his cane, unfortunately, yeah. will
flips it
and tips it over. He looks back and says, "Oops, whoa, did I do that?" You know, so that's the Schlemiel in a sense. He's a causative agent, if you will. Now, the actual character, Peter Schlemiel, was from a series of books that came out written in the beginning of the 19th century in Germany. So the term Schlemiel became a very common term.
Let's take a call from Andover, Massachusetts. Dave is on the line. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Two very quick things. One, I've had the absolute distinct honor of being in a congregation that has had Rabbi Waldock come in and speak, Habarat Shalom, in Andover several times.
Wonderful.
In the past years, and his humor is only eclipsed by his spirituality.
That's a good combo right there.
No, seriously, he's a wonderful, wonderful man.
Thank you. It's my Uncle Dave. Thanks for calling.
The check will arrive tomorrow, Dave. Thank you.
So when are you coming home for dinner? The story about the Jewish tailor that finds himself in China during the High Holy Days. Do you know that one?
Yes, tell it. I want to hear you tell it.
It's a wonderful story.
Please, make it short.
Textile salesman finds himself in China desperately looking for a synagogue during the High Holy Days.
Yes, okay.
Looks up and finds one. He can't believe that. Written in Hebrew, obviously it's a synagogue. Comes in, all of the Chinese gentlemen are wearing Jewish prayer garb, and they're praying away in Hebrew. The rabbi gives his sermon, and at the end, the tailor from New York City is weeping in tears. He's so moved. And the following conversation happens only in Yiddish. And he says to the rabbi, I've never heard a sermon like this in my whole life. And the rabbi looks at him and he says, you Jewish? You don't look Jewish.
Very good. Thank you, Dave.
Dave.
I think that's us.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
We got it and we love it. Thanks for calling. Let's get another from Brookline, Massachusetts. Martha, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Your show is a treat. Reminded of a very funny show that I think was in the 70s, Bridget Loves Bernie.
You got me.
Yeah, it was a controversial show at the time. It wasn't that funny, but okay. It was very controversial because at that time it was like AB's Irish Rose. It was about intermarriage
between
an Irishman and the Jewish.
Okay.
At that time that was controversial. Now it seems to be required.
What'd you think of it, Martha?
I was a child watching it, and I thought it was a comedy. And I went to Catholic schools, and I didn't know a whole lot about the Jewish faith at the time. But I'm just submitting it because it was in the 70s, certainly long before many of the other shows have surfaced. And
right there, it was stepping into the mainstream, kind of crossing a boundary.
You know who else did who brought that to the Sullivan Show, which was a ritual, by the way, in most homes, in Jewish homes, as most Jewish grandmothers said, you got to watch Ed Solomon. That's Ed Solomon, the Ed Solomon Show. It was Stiller and Mira. And Jerry Stiller is still around, you know, on King of Queens, and he, of course, played George's father on Seinfeld. He and his wife did a wonderful routine for years about meeting together, she being Irish and him being Jewish. And they were really groundbreaking in that way back in the late 60s.
Did they have any kids?
Let me see. Stiller. Maybe.
Younger listeners may not know that Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, of course. Ben Stiller grew up in a very much an entertainment family. And
Take us into some of these from the original structure. I mean, you laid out these wonderful categories, but the first part of the book is deeper meanings. I wish you'd give us some sample or example.
Well, you know, in a way, all of Jewish humor, to me, if you look at the Jewish intellectual tradition, it's about reading texts and providing and studying and creating commentaries on those texts.
Digging deeper and deeper. In fact, your structure from the get-go had
that
kind of, as with sacred texts in Judaism, you've got down the side of each page.
Along the margins
insights.
Of the book is small print commentary. Mm-hmm. Much of it simply consists of other jokes that, you know, the main joke reminds you of.
But
sometimes there's commentary. You try not to explain a joke because that can kill it.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's something interesting about it and you provide it.
But what has lasted from deeper meanings? What do you find people that really respond to there over this?
I'll tell you, in my family, my family loves this joke. A Jew in Warsaw goes to the post office and he says, "How often does the mail go to Pinsk?" Mm. And the man says, "It goes from here to Pinsk every day." And the Jew is silent for a moment and he says, "Thursdays too?" In other words, just checking. You can't be too safe, you know? And when and so someone in our family at the dinner table will say, Thursdays too, meaning, are you sure? Can I check that?
Absolutely sure.
Here's one where Katz is sitting naked in his room wearing only a top hat.
Okay.
And Cohen walks in, says, why are you sitting here naked? It's all right, said Katz. Nobody comes to visit. But why the hat? Well, maybe somebody will come.
I love it. I love it. Jewish and Goyish. I mean, Martha began to look at this with Bridget Loves Bernie. But, you know, where the cultures meet, lots of humor has come there. What's
well, you know, Lenny Bruce made this the most famous by saying, you know, what, lime jello is Goyish and
cherry soda, black cherry soda is Jewish. Or he came up with the one with white bread being Goyish, instant mashed potatoes being Goyish.
Yeah.
But he was the one, Lenny Bruce, we have to talk about a little bit. Lenny Bruce is really an important figure. He was called a sick comedian, of course, who's part of that whole attempt to change comedy from being the telling of jokes to comedy being, if you will,
a social
observation and personal, etc. He wrote this famous routine where he tries to create the idea that if you live in New York or any other big city, you're going to be Jewish. It doesn't matter even if you're Catholic. If you live in New York, you're Jewish. If you live in Butte, Montana, you're going to be Goyish, even if you're Jewish. Meaning that somehow there is and this goes back to the fact that for many, with the Marx Brothers in the 1920s and 30s, we see the beginning of this process of translating Jewish humor into urban humor. It's ironic that today when you say urban humor, you're talking about African American humor,
right? Chris Rock, you name it.
Remember, it's very hard for many people to comprehend. Jews were seen very much like blacks were seen today as a distinct urban culture, sometimes dangerous, sometimes to be watched, but because of their outsider status, they were given a certain kind of credulity. The way we give today through the urban comics who really tell it as it is.
And it was a long list. William Novak, you've got a piece of that there. The names of the men mainly.
Mostly men, right. We'll talk about that too if you want.
Who brought it home. I see you flipping madly
through. I'm flipping through it. I lost the
list. Such a large book. I wonder what it cost. Let's see. Gee, that's real.
Well, we made a list in the original edition of Jews who've made a contribution to American humor. And I'll just read the first few names. Joey Adams, Woody Allen, Maury Amsterdam, Jack Benny, Milton Berle, Shelley Berman, Joey Bishop, Victor Borga, David Brenner, Fanny Bryce, Albert Brooks, Mel Brooks, Lenny Bruce, Art Buckwell, George Burns, and I'm still on the B's.
Right.
That's how long the list is, and we haven't even updated it.
Is there any Z's?
Give it time.
The last one is Henny Youngman.
We're talking about Jewish humor in American culture this hour, from the Borscht Belt to the South Park, The Simpsons, you name it. The Big Book of Jewish Humor is out in its 25th anniversary edition this year. The co-editors, William Novak and Rabbi Moshe Waldox, are with us this hour. Here's a little bit from Comedy Central's cartoon, South Park, irreverent, often rife with raunchy language, but took on a Jewish theme with its episode, Jubilee. In this scene, Kyle, who's Jewish, asks his mom if his non-Jewish friend Kenny can join him for a night with the Jew Scouts.
Mom, can Kenny go to Jubilee with me?
Well, Kyle, Jubilee is sort of a special thing.
Oh, Kenny isn't special?
No, no, you're very special, Kenny. It's just that, well, Jubilee is for Jewish kids.
You see, boys, Jew Scouts is a special group that borrows a little bit from all different Jewish denominations. From the Orthodox Jews, from the Hasidic Jews, from the Northern Italy cave Jews. But you have to believe the basic tenets of Judaism to be a scout.
Kenny will believe whatever you want him to.
Woo! Kyle, the problem is...
Please, Ma, I don't think Kenny has anywhere else to be tonight.
Oh, all right. Just don't let any of the elders know that he isn't Jewish, okay?
Woohoo!
Don't worry, Kenny. I'll fill you in on our faith on the way up there. And then, Kenny, Abraham's wife bore him no children. She had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar.
Off we go. An instant education for Kenny, maybe including something more on the Northern Italy cave Jews. William Novak, author of, ghostwriter with so many big books, from Tip O'Neill to Tim Russert, and right on is with us Rabbi Moshe Waldox, co-editors of the Big Bush Book of, of Jewish Humor, and of course that from South Park. Jessica's calling right now from New York. Hi, Jessica, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I really noticed is we haven't really been talking about women in Jewish humor, and while women can be, in the past, were left to the back sort of Judaism's practice, but wanted the author and the rabbi to speak about the Jewish women's role in Jewish humor today and within the book.
We're glad you asked. We were talking about it just now at the break. Right. Rabbi Waldox, what do you say?
There is a tradition in Jewish humor, American Jewish humor, particularly of the red hot mama. And I agree, it was really a male domain for many, many, many years. And only a few women could really crack through. Sophie Tucker, Fanny Bryce were exceptional. Toady Fields later on, Joan Rivers to a certain extent. But I think after the 70s, we've seen a really tremendous growth of Jewish women in writing comedy, performing comedy, and we'll continue to see that, I'm sure. Judy Gold, Carol Liefer, Susie Essman, Karen Ladman. We can go on. There are names that some people
do know.
Sarah
Silverman.
Sarah Silverman's doing quite well for herself. Again, controversial, takes on a lot of controversial topics. I no longer can talk about Jewish humor as a male-dominated kind of endeavor, but it was for quite a while, and it's been really great to see this kind of burst of I love some of the comic actresses that have emerged. Debbie Messing, of course, in Will and Grace, and just tremendous amount of talent out there, and we are seeing more and more of it.
Is it just part and parcel of women's liberation, the women's movement? It seeped into the Jewish community too, and boom,
Remember, before 1972, there were no women rabbis. So we're talking about definitely a major cosmic seismic change that Jewish women are finally, after many, many thousands of years, finally offering their unique contribution, which is I believe, vitally necessary.
Is it different? Does it change Jewish humor when it gets a feminine
Absolutely.
Twist on it? How?
Well, it doesn't change. Look, it's like many of the first comedians had to feel like the red hot mamas had to be male-like.
Yeah.
They had to be self-deprecating. They had to be rather harsh. And I still think that humor performance humor still has an aggressive quality to it.
Of course.
So the women getting involved have to exhibit a certain aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. And that may not be so bad, because I think ultimately it's very hard to have nice humor. I'm sorry to say. You have to have a certain edge.
Zing. Yep.
An edge. And I think women are certainly capable of an edge as men are.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
ouch. Haven't we all? Let's get another Jessica in New York. Thanks. Jessica in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Well, very well. Very well. I couldn't be happier. What do you say, Jessica?
I was just hoping that the authors could talk a little bit about the character of the schnorrer or trickster in Jewish humor and why he figures so prominently.
The trickster, the schnorrer. Give us some examples and tell us what's up here.
Schnorrer is a poor Jew with middle-class values.
He's literally a beggar,
or a panhandler. The schnorrer comes to Kugelman for his monthly handout. He knocks on the door. There's no reply. He knocks again, and a disheveled-looking Kugelman answers the door.
Yeah.
What's the matter? Asked the schnorrer. Is something wrong? I've gone bankrupt. Haven't you heard? Certainly I heard. Then what do you want from me? I want 10 cents on the dollar. So this idea that the schnorrer is entitled, it really reflects a very, very deep sense of what the Jewish understanding of charity or tzedakah is, that it's not something you should do when you feel charitable, but it's literally an obligation. You have a obligation to give, and the poor have an obligation and entitled to get.
To ask.
And in fact, one way we know the schnorrer had power, not political power, obviously, but moral power, is that there are Jewish jokes at his expense. For example, Mrs. Cohen opens the door, and the schnorrer is there. He says, please, lady, I haven't eaten in 3 days. New, she says, you should force yourself.
but Jessica looks at this, and you're describing kind of the beggar. She's seeing the trickster aspect.
No, she didn't say that. She said schnorrer.
Schnorrer, but she was saying the trickster role. Is the schnorrer the trickster?
No, the schnorrer is not the trickster. I would say the trickster would be more of the batkin or the jester. We had a character usually associated with Purim. Mm-hmm. Purim is a time for tricksterism. Mm-hmm. Purim is a festival in the spring, sort of the Jewish Mardi Gras, where you basically, or carnival, where you switch roles and you wear masks and you wear costumes.
Jump into the old biblical stories, Esther, as you said, have some fun.
Exactly, but more importantly, what it does, it's a liminal, dangerous kind of festivity like Mardi Gras was, and that's why in the church, Mardi Gras leads to Lent. Wow. And in the Jewish tradition, Purim leads to preparing for Passover,
the most
Apollonian, if you will, whereas Purim is very
Dionysian and all the fun that goes with
it. But there's where trickterism really, really works. Now, the Bible is filled, the book of Genesis particularly, with tricks and tricksters.
And deception.
And deception. And it's part
snakes
of our...
Snakes and apples, and out you go.
Well, no, I would say more about, usurpation of primogeniture.
Who's wrapping himself in the lamb's...
In the who's the oldest? Who's
the oldest? The bottom line is I think to be Jewish is to really never accept things as they are, because we only have the capacity of partial truth. Mm-hmm. And to really see, to accept things as they are and not look behind it, and not look under it, is such a contraction of consciousness that ultimately leads to the kind of world we're stuck with.
Mm. But we live in it, and so we left. Let me go to Port Royal, South Carolina, and Sheldon. Hi, Sheldon. You're on
Sheldon.
The air.
Hi there.
Come home.
Hi there. Moshe, that is beautiful. I bought your book almost when it was published 25 years ago, a Mazel Tov on your 25th anniversary.
Thank you so much.
I have a joke you probably have never heard, but it is, I classify it as the funniest joke I have ever heard.
No pressure. This better be good, kid.
The setting is a home, a Hasidic home, with a mother and a father who have a 30-year-old son who has never been married, a sin in the Hasidic community.
Yeah.
So they bring in a shadchan, a marriage broker, and he flips through his book and he says, to the young man who's sitting there with his mother and father, have I got a girl for you? This is a girl from the fifth dynasty all the way back to the greatest of the Hasidim. And he says, and not only that, she's beautiful, and one bonus, she loves children. So the young man says, all right, of course, that's beautiful, but tell me, is she good in bed? So the marriage broker says, some say yes, some say no.
Very good.
I never did hear
it. Very good.
Yeah,
find the joke that we haven't
thank
heard.
Thank you, Sheldon.
Good. Thank you for raising the level, too.
Right. Sheldon, thanks very much. Well, let's get another from Virginia Beach. Virginia, Lou, you're on the air.
Do you guys remember the radio show, Can You Top This, with Joe Lurie Jr., Henry Hirschfield, and Henry Ford?
We're a little young.
We're going back 60 years.
Yeah, well, I'm not that old.
We were busy being born.
Right.
But that, they just told one Jewish joke after another.
People don't realize that radio was a much more ethnic phenomena and multicultural in a way that we have forgotten. I give an example of the Jack Benny Show, if you remember. He surrounded himself by an entourage of ethnics. He had Mr. Kitzel. He had Rochester. He had Wilson, the whitest person in the world.
Okay.
he was so white that he looked like a large whale, and he was always afraid of Gregory Peck coming at him with a harpoon.
The harpoon.
Right. And then you had even Fred Allen, who wasn't Jewish, had to have Mrs. Nussbaum, meaning that it was amazing how many ethnic material existed on American radio in the 1930s and 40s.
Lou, thanks very much for that call. There's one more I have to throw out on the table here. Not American, but widely played all over America recently. Sacha Baron Cohen and his Borat movie out recently.
Yes.
Let's listen to just a little bit here. This happens to be something. He stays at a B&B run by an elderly couple. It's part of this movie mocking and sending up so much of America. This happens to be a B&B run by a Jewish couple.
It
happens to be in our backyard here in Newton, Massachusetts.
It happens to be in our hometown.
Yeah. Right. Here in this scene, Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen reacts violently in character as the Kazakhstan guy when he finds out that the couple running the B&B is Jewish. Later, he calls the B&B a nest of Jews.
A beautiful house.
All the paintings in the house I did.
What is this man?
This is a Yemeni Jew, and he's working on a piece of jewelry. The Yemenites were also jewelers.
Why you have a picture of a Jew?
Because I'm Jewish, so I have lots of pictures of Jews.
And off he goes pretty soon, screaming right out of that house. All right, you guys wrote the book. You put it all together. Here's Borat. People respond in all kinds of ways.
All kinds of ways. I laughed throughout. The guy's a genius. And by the way, if it matters, I'm not sure it does, a committed and knowledgeable Jew. I think enough people have seen the movie now that I won't be giving away any terrible secret if I tell you that the language he's speaking throughout the movie when he's not speaking English is Hebrew, and it's pretty good Hebrew. I understand that some people feel uncomfortable with it. Here's my take on it.
Because, yes. I mean, he's talking, in Kazakhstan, we throw Jews down the well in the whole business.
He's making fun of anti-Semitism, and, you know, if you are concerned about anti-Semitism, and you have to be, this is not a big example of it. Not with Iran, not with the things that Arab children are taught in their schools and their textbooks. This does not bother me. There are many, many bigger problems. Nonetheless, it is offensive, and I understand if you don't find it funny.
Well, Rabbi, are you laughing?
The subtlety, I love the film, and not everybody agrees with me on it, but I love the film. I thought it was an anti-Semitic film, and of course that's subtle, and it's hard for people to sometimes get that. I see Sacha Baron Cohen as emerging as the Peter Sellers of our generation.
Many guises.
He goes very deep into his characters. Mm-hmm. Peter Sellers also happened to be Jewish. Mm-hmm. Never did anything overtly Jewish. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing where Sasha goes because, as I say, he's one of a new generation of young comedians who are not products of this sort of attempt to assimilate into American life. They're raised as Jews.
Or British life.
Or British life. They're raised as Jews. They know they're Jewish. There's not a real desire to become white bread on their part.
But speaking to a huge audience.
And speaking
right
to a huge audience of more and more people who are comfortable in their identity. You see, this is what's happening. I think we see a breakdown of this desire to have the melting pot. We're beginning to really understand that for the free world to be powerful, we have to respect the possibility of people maintaining their identities. And I think that's what people are searching for, a way to retain their identity within the larger culture.
It is complex that maybe retaining identity, but yet, as you point out, in every direction we look, things running into one another and melding with one another at the same time.
Like jazz. I mean, good example. Yeah. One time jazz was called African-American music, Negro music, right? But now we see it as an American art form. And I think same thing with Jewish humor. Jewish humor was once restricted perhaps for the Jewish community, but now it's really an American art form.
Let me get one more call here from Providence, Rhode Island. Manoog, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful that we've gone through the whole nomenclature of the humor, and I just wanted to introduce and maybe have another show on the incubation. There seems to be a predisposition, almost a predisposition, and a divine gift for those who, you know, experience pain. And I'm going beyond the Jewish community, but the Jews do it so well, the suffering. And I've worked in mass trauma, in earthquakes, in wars of ethnic cleansing. I was at the World Trade Center. But in particularly when it's natural disasters, there is a sense of humor that comes out, no matter how tough things are. In the words of Porter Halliburton, who was a fellow Vietnam veteran but a prisoner of war, he said, they took everything away from us in that prisoner of war camp, but they could not touch our sense of humor.
And there you come close to many experiences and certainly to the Jewish experience, Moshe Waldach.
And yet, with all that said, if you examine the humor that we're talking about, only a fraction deals with suffering. It deals much more with self-evaluation, self-criticism, the inner workings of the community. To be honest, if you take suffering to be funny, I'd rather be less funny.
Yeah, really. And what Moshe is also saying, I think, is that the theorists have tried to say that Jewish humor is all about suffering. Mm. And there's a grain of truth to it, but it's not all about suffering. It's about finding comedy in pretentiousness and pomposity and family relations.
Authority and, figures, etc.
Yeah, many things.
25 years, it's and it still just leaps right off the page. Another 25, do we keep going back to these? Are these timeless, or is it going to take a whole other book, a quarter century old?
As long as they're bar mitzvah boys and girls, this gift book will change their lives.
And as long as there are sick people who need something
as long as we need to
read.
Be cheered up, this book will stay alive. So go out and buy millions of copies so Bill and I can retire to Florida and buy a condo.
That's fantastic. Wow, I'm so grateful to both of you for doing it in the first place, for keeping it alive, for updating it, for coming in with your great good humor today. William Novak and Rabbi Moshe Waldach, thank you very much.
What a pleasure it's been.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure for us. The Big Book of Jewish Humor, out in its 25th anniversary edition. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.